Hello, this is Susanna, and welcome to a special edition of the Rare Frequency Podcast. This podcast features an interview that was first broadcast in March 2006 with musician Ivan Pavlov, who is better known as Son. The occasion of this interview is the release of his solo CD on Coil's Eschaton label, a CD called Above Air. And the occasion of this podcast, or of my finally putting this up as a podcast, is the release of his Patherns EP on Raster Noton, which is a label where he released his first CD back in the late 90s, Enter Tinnitus. This interview was conducted by phone in the WZBC studios.
I'm joined on the phone from Sweden by Ivan Pavlov, who is perhaps better known by his musical pseudonym Son. Hi, Ivan.
Hello, Susanna.
I wanted to start by talking about the new record, Above Air, which is a very beautiful record, which was dedicated to John Balance, the late lead singer of Coil. And I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about the origins of the record and the ultimate shape that it took.
Oh, thank you for the good words about it. But yeah, well, essentially the record is not dedicated as a work to John Balance. But, well, after it has been done, I decided that I could probably refer to him in the way that would be sort of celebrating his memory. Essentially, the record was conceived as a project that we wanted to do together, as a Son versus Elf sort of collaboration, and which we've been friends for many years now, and they seem to be interested in doing something together with me after we did the Love and Cutting EP earlier. They kind of enjoyed working. Well, I enjoyed working with them immensely as well. But we wanted to do something together as well. And then I was all very passionate about the Elf output, the things that they recorded in the name of Elf. And we've been talking about the ideas behind it and the happenings behind Elf and the concepts for the new works that they were going to do with Elf. And then I also had my own idea that I was toying around with for quite a long time. It was about an aircraft pilot, a supersonic aircraft pilot that would be flying really high up, like stratosphere, which is actually impossible, but it's a speculation. Penetrated by cosmic rays or electromagnetic fields, all kinds of disturbances that you find in the upper layers of atmosphere, hallucinating on the oxygen that he gets through his mask, and having visions, and being in between heaven and earth, being in nowhere. We've discussed that idea with John Balance as well, and we wanted to do it. Unfortunately, he died, and the last time we had a discussion about this was about 3 weeks before he died, and I sent the material to him, and later I realized that he'd never opened the envelope because, well, it came too late. So I decided that I will do that record on my own, and because I fancy the idea. I really like the concept, and it's been long in discussions for a number of years, so it kind of made sense. Now, I had to try and make the sound a bit more analog, in a way, because my more characteristic sound that people probably would call characteristic is a bit more sharp and clinical and, I don't know, more computer-sounding, even though probably not as sharp as many others. But this time I was trying to really make it sound what it could have sounded like if we worked together. It would have sounded completely different, but it's just my attempt to complete the work that we never managed to complete together. So yeah, this is the short story behind it.
Was the process behind it very different from what you've done in the past? I mean, I know you said you were trying to get this different, more analog quality to the sounds. Were you actually working with analog?
No,
equipment?
Not for this record anyway. Everything is created within the computer, but it's just different. It's more like a different set of mind, I would say. It's even the same software that you use. It's just like a different state of mind that you're recording with. And it was quite a difficult process, this album, because in order to get into that kind of state of the pilot that is being out there, you have to try and make yourself quite isolated, and it sort of brings problems into your relationship with the people around you. Mm-hmm. But it also kind of isolates you from the way you've recorded material before. It kind of isolates you from your past in a way. So in technical terms, so it was lucky that the concept of the analog or supposedly analog record coincided with this kind of sense of isolation, because once you enter that kind of special state of mind, it's quite easy to actually do make it sound different. Well, still, you can't hide from your own identity in a way. I'm sure it's present there, but you still have like this chance to actually try out something new, even though it's not any special in the way of the pro. There's no special process. There's no special instrument. It's the same software that you use, and it's just a different set of mind. Yes.
So, how did you begin working with computers in the first place? To go back sort of to the origins of your musical. What attracted you about working with computers?
Well, I started doing the computer stuff in about, it was around 91, 92. I was still studying at university in Russia in acoustics, the Department of Acoustics, and we got one of these first 486. We had 386 PCs, which is a processor type, and then we got a new one, which came with a project sponsored by Canada. I don't remember what it was, but anyway, it had like a, didn't have a sound card. It had a sort of this system speaker that you would call beeper or something. And then you had all this kind of tracker software that was obviously quite popular at some time. I'm not sure if it was the same time in Russia that there was in Europe or in America. But somebody gave this to me, and this Scream Tracker version 2, I still remember it. And, it was running under MS-DOS. Windows was not really quite popular yet, mm-hmm. where I was working. Mm-hmm. So I was playing around with it. Like, it came with a bunch of samples and stuff, and you can play 4 samples at the same time. And I was just playing around with it. And I realized that this is much more funny than actually playing with the musical instruments, because you have much more freedom, even in this kind of limited environment. And I actually have material from that time that I recorded, and I was listening to it recently, and I'm going to use some of it in my next album.
So it's pre-0397 post-pop material? Something from when you were in Russia?
From 92. It's material from 92.
Two, so 91. 5 years earlier.
So it's very funny. When I listen to it, I can't stop laughing. It's very intense. It has a lot of ideas that are compressed into like 1.5 minute track. It's almost like John Zorn, but it's like a bit more sort of. You can clearly hear like what records I've been listening to at that time, and it's quite funny. So I think I will use snippets of it like as a little joke for my next album. I hope. I think I have this idea right now. Anyway,
were you already studying acoustical engineering at the point when you started working with computers, or did that grow out of it?
Yes. Yeah, well, I was... I'm not really sure if it is connected somehow, but I think the first time it clicked for me, the connection between what I was studying and how it can connect to the music, to the making of music, is when I saw first Panasonic live, when they were projecting, like, the wave profiles. Well, you know, they have like this projection, that oscillator kind of projection, where you can see the actual sound output displayed in as oscillogram,
mm-hmm.
or like the wave shape. And that's exactly the way I'm used to thinking about sound. It's very graphical for me, because I was studying acoustics, and you have these wave profiles and recordings of all these kind of field distribution, acoustic field distribution, and it's all very graphical to me. It kind of clicked at about that time, I think.
How did your association with Rastronauton begin? Especially in your early career, you were very much associated sort of as a Rastronauton artist, although that's shifted a lot since then. How did you first start working? It seemed rather self-conscious, but or intentional. But how did you become associated with Karsten Nikolai and the rest of the Rastrenoton people?
I think when I met, I first met a person called John Everall. He used to run a record label called Centrex in Nottingham in UK. And he had a fantastic band called Tactile. He's still active, and I'm hoping to do something together with him right now. I have some material that he sent to me, but it's another story. So there was a time around the end of 97, I suppose, or middle of, sometime around that time. Then I met a number of people that were quite influential to me, including John Everall, and I met John and Sleazy. I met Panasonic, Mika Rainier, and I think it was just Mika I met at the time, with Jimmy Tenner. It was a bunch of people that I met in my trips to England or somewhere else. So when I make the first record, which is present on the Post Pop as a second CD, which was called In Spaces Between at the time, and I just made like this very small edition of seven copies, which were like handmade. They were never actually seven; they were like four or five in the end. But it's supposed to be like they're numbered as if they have seven. So I've just given them to them, these records. As they were quite really nice artwork, really like handmade things. They're like more like gifts of appreciation or respect or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, this kind of thing that I've given to people that I believe sort of have a strong connection for me. And so I gave one to John Everall, I gave one to Jeff Sleazy, and then I gave one to Mika, and so on. And apparently, Mika and Carsten, who runs the Rastrenoton, who was running the Rastrenoton together with Olaf at the time, he ended up in a train with Mika Rainier, where they were playing somewhere in Europe together, and they were on the train together, and Mika gave Carsten the CD on the train, and Carsten was listening to it in his CD player in the headphones and on the train. And after he finished listening to it, he gave me a call from his mobile phone directly from the train, calling me and saying, "Hello, my name is Carsten Nicolai. I just heard your record that you've given to Mika Rainier, and I think it's fantastic, and we want to release it, and please give us the permission." And I was just like, I never had any ideas about releasing music or anything. I never really was thinking those terms. But it was quite flattering in a way, and I was happy that he could speak in such simple terms. And then when we met, then apparently they come from East Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Rastrenoton is based from East Germany. So they kind of, we have very close sort of almost family-like, it was very close friendship altogether, and we still are very good friends, and I'm going to be doing my next album for Rastrenoton as well, and probably be associated more and more with them.
So you did, the first record you did with them was Mask of Birth?
Yeah, no, Mask of Birth came out later. They wanted, first they wanted to do this in Spaces Between.
Mm-hmm.
But by that time, I already had another bunch of material that was that later came to be known as a Mask of Birth. And I said, "All right, but come on, guys, I have a bit more of fresh material." And I said, "How about that?" And I sent them Mask of Birth, and I said, "This is fantastic." And then they go like, "Okay, we start a new series, which is called Static."
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, well, that was a series where Entertinitus came up. And when I heard the name Static, it just I realized that I want to do another record for it, because it's a very sort of strong concept. Well, first you have like computer music shielded by computer packaging, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then Static is also about static electricity, or static as pertaining to motion or non-moving and things, which is like, to me, is like potent, or like that has a possibility to movement, or maybe a hidden movement. I was really excited about this, and I told them, "All right, can I do a new record instead?" So we skipped the first two albums, and I made the new one, so it came out as Entertainers. Mask of Birth came out later, and, the In Spaces Between came out, and Negro is post-op.
Yeah.
Even though Rastrenoton were very like sort of, "Oh, come on, how could you release it?" And we really wanted to. We always wanted to release this record. Why didn't you give it? It was like this. And now I just made a new EP for Rastrenoton, and it's coming out in the Rastapot series. It's called Patterns.
Called which? Passand?
Patterns. It's like patterns.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Path with H. I can't stop playing with English words. Well, I'm sure Rustin Odom will misspell it again on the record.
Adding to
they have already once corrected it to patterns, and I was very upset.
So, I mean, your last, like, three or four records have been very different one from another. Is this also the same? Because I think of, really, of Seasons with the emphasis on wooden, more traditional acoustic instruments, and then going to Electric, the EP on Mago, which is sort of son club music, sort of much more, not quite danceable, but almost. Mm-hmm. And then Above Air, again, being very different from the others. Is this also very different, or is there some other release you can compare it to? Or
no, Patterns is a bit like a post. It's a post-pop kind of. It's sort of, you know, I had Enter Tinnitus,
mm-hmm.
and then the follow-up was Vox Tinnitus EP. Then I had a Mask of Birth LP, and the follow-up to it was Love Uncut EP. So it's like Iron never had a follow-up, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to do it somehow. It's quite rhythmic. It's very much like post-pop. CD, well, the first CD, it's a club techno. Well, it's not really kind of club. It's not danceable, but mm-hmm. it's very rhythmical and energetic. Well, the subtitle, it's quite, but it's also leaning towards the lyricism, or what you call it, of Above Air, because it has a subtitle, which is Four Exercises in, what was it? In constructive melancholy. Sorry.
That's very nice. Well, I mean, also with Above Air, the titles, the poetic titles, are they references to anything specific, or are they taken from a poem? Because both of them are, they have very, very poetic titles.
Well, I'm not sure my English is good enough to make these kind of things, but I was hoping that I can make, I write a verse.
Mm-hmm.
Each line of which would be representing a track title. So this was my attempt. So the all the track titles together should read as a verse, a continuous verse about the pilot being in between heaven and earth in a steel machine, hallucinating God or Elf mm-hmm. or John Balance, whoever he's addressing, whoever he's talking to, and just being there. For me, the last line was like, beneath my soundproof eyelids. Soundproof is the helmet, you know.
Mm.
Truth never sleeps. And it's just, it hints at that he's going quite berserk. He's quite instinct, because he believes carrying the truth within him. And the last is quite an attempt at making it quite insane. And I don't know. It was this was the idea that this the whole verse should link to the, they should also relate to the pieces, and the pieces together should also form this kind of mental state that would be corresponding to this pilot in between heaven and earth.
I realize that I haven't asked you at all or asked to discuss it all, since we're talking about language a little bit, about the name Son
mm-hmm.
and its significance. I mean, to a Westerner's eyes, looking at the name Son, for those listeners who haven't seen it spelled, it would look to an American or Westerner as if it were pronounced Co.
Mm.
But in fact, the letters are Cyrillic, not Latin, and are pronounced Son, meaning sleep and also dream in Russian. Could you talk a little why you chose the particular pseudonym and the references to sleeping and dreaming?
Well, I must say that now I was looking at the web, like browsing to see if there's anything that's called Above Air, just to make sure it's kind of not overused kind of thing. I found a lot of like chemical text where I found like there's nothing that's called Above Air, but there's a lot of kind of experiments and stuff, and they have like COH thing that's actually Yeah, it's aberration for coefficient of haze, which is about the visibility. It's actually about the transparency of the air. So it fits perfectly well. So for this record, I suppose COH could stand for coefficient of haze. No, I was just in the beginning when John Averill, that person that I was quite friendly, or is a very good friend of mine. He was going to release a compilation of things, and he was very positive about my work as well. He was always encouraging me to record more and stuff. And he just says, "Come on, let's do a thing." And we did this compilation, which was called Interiors. Interiors came out on Centrix in 98, I think, or something. Maybe later, I don't remember. And he used some photographs of that. I was doing quite a lot of photography at the time. Anyway, I had a piece for it, and there's a Seas for Sleep is in this compilation. And I had to pick up the name for the project, and I was just like wondering what the name should be, and I had to make it like sort of short, and it had to be obscure, and I had to, and it was like, there are several reasons that you can find. Apparently, being in this project, which featured Coyle, I don't remember what was there, Zoget Franz, Mick Harris, and lots of people, like Drew McDowell, I think, was there with a solo piece, Elf. I don't remember. There was a bunch of tracks from quite established artists. And I couldn't just believe it. I was like, well, it was quite unbelievable anyway, something that you wouldn't dream about or wish for ever. And so Son is like, that's a dream come true, which I never had, really, this dream. On the other hand, I'm not sure how many photographs of me you have seen. Son, if read backwards, is nos, which is the nose, in Russian, which is kind of self-ironic sort of references. But also nose is has to do with your identity and the sense of things, and well, in Russian at least. And There's a beautiful novel by Gogol which is called Nose, which is quite surreal. It's where the nose leaves the owner and starts like living its own life and visiting people. And so it's quite interesting. And then I also figured out something that which is a silly thing that I've come across to when I was. I realized that much later that if you spell like the name COH matches. Like, you know, matches. Like, if you spell it, matches. And it's just one move of a match that makes coil. That was really funny. I realized
that. You inadvertently. Well, to shift gears a little bit, I did want to talk about your ongoing collaboration with Richard Chartier as Chess Machine. Could you talk a little bit about the project itself? But also how you came to work with him. You're, on the surface, it would seem to be very, very different since he's extremely quiet, minimalist, digital musician, and you're less quiet. So how did this project come about?
Well, we've been friends since quite some time. I think I remember you wrote to me first when Enter Tinnitus came out, and he was very, like, sort of complimenting on my work and always saying good words about it. So eventually we met up somewhere at Mutec, and we were in touch quite a bit, and then I just, that's exactly what made me think about a chess game with him, because I thought, I liked his work as well. I mean, he's quiet and quite subtle, and very, something that I would never be able to do because I don't have enough patience to make things so fine and finally detailed, and he has a lot of passion for that. But anyway, I really wanted to do something with him because, just as a continuation of friendship, I suppose, and it comes then quite naturally. Black and white. He's very quiet, and I'm a bit on the louder side, I suppose. And So we had, like, we have the contrast, and he's American and I'm Russian, and that's another kind of contrast. And he's got a Macintosh and I've got a PC, which is another kind of contrast. And then he's gay and I'm straight, which is another kind of contrast. And it just went on and on, the, all these kind of sets of things just get into each other. And I felt like this is a very appropriate concept. And he was quite freaked out at the beginning, I think, because he never worked with anybody like him in that kind of manner. Neither did I, really. So I kind of, I agreed that to compensate for his sense of, for his lack of comfort, we'll use software which I haven't used before, so I will feel uncomfortable as well. And then it just kind of, this kind of idea of conflict rather than collaboration, in terms of, like, it's more like directing your efforts against each other rather than, like, in the same direction. That kind of, that's a very attractive thing, I think, and it was very interesting to try and do that and see if it will work out. And then it came about as we both tried to impose a strategy onto each other, and he started making louder pieces and I started making quieter pieces which had more detail and everything. It was very interesting to see it develop. Yeah, that's how we basically did it.
Do you have any plans to revisit it, or at least revisit it in a live context again, or is it something that is a finished set of games?
No, I mean, we do live performances now, and there was one going to be in Valencia, Spain, now in May, but I think it's going to be cancelled because there's something happened with them. But generally, we played several live performances where we kind of continue this and we make new moves and we surprise each other as well. Because he's never sure if I'm going to play this or if I'm not going to play this or what I'm going to play then. It's a bit of a sort of provoking each other, and it's interesting. I think it's I hope it continues.
Yeah, his music has also gotten considerably louder, or less spare, I should say, in the last couple of years.
I was hoping for that.
You mentioned that the Raster Noton Patterns release. What other things are you currently working on?
Patterns. It's going to be patterns.
I can't. Patterns. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be all Raster with you and redo it.
Well, then you have to speak with German accent.
Oh, I can work on it.
Right.
So what current projects are you working on other?
I have, right now I'm making a piece that will, like a longer piece, which is more like an installation piece, and I probably will do some joint work with that piece. And Tina Frank, who is a visual artist, a video or graphic artist that made lots of Mego covers, and among other things. I mean, at least this is something that she's famous for, but she's a very good friend, and I like what she can do. And then I'm working on the new album that will probably feature strips from my very, very first computer works. And then me and Sleazy are in the process of putting our efforts together. We don't know exactly what we will be about, like, and when, but there's apparently a mutual interest. We played a show in St. Petersburg on the 23rd of December, which was a concert in memory of John Barnes. So Sleazy played a solo show and I played a solo show, and we kind of had a lot of conversations and long interviews and things. And there's a chance that we will do something together because it seems quite interesting. And well, there's a couple of other projects that I would not want to be naming at the moment because it's too early. And they're also collaborations that involve other people. But most of all is like this one piece that I'm going to do, a long one, like about 20 minutes piece, which will probably reflect upon the 20 minutes to 2000 somehow.
Ooh.
And that was another attempt at analog music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I must say also I'm enjoying working with a classical instruments at the moment, because the new record that I'm making will be using these. Not in exactly the same manner as the Seasons did, but I really appreciated it. And I really appreciated the instruments when I was working with Seasons, and I want to do more of that. So the next record will be something like that. Then I want to do, at some point, I want to do another Iron, or another heavy metal, or death metal, or black metal, I don't know what, another metal record, a really spooky one. A scary one, I want to do a scary heavy metal record. I'll probably do some scary vocals as well.
Oh, excellent.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm capable of them, but I will give it a try.
Well,
at least with this kind of music, you don't really have to bother much about the lyrics. So.
You mean in terms of with death metal stuff, you don't have to worry
too
much?
Yeah, no, you can't really understand what this is.
Right, exactly.
Like post-pulp ended up being an instrumental record only because I couldn't figure out what kind of lyrics I have to make, because this was supposed to be like a proper record with songs that I was going to make. The only lyrics that I knew I would use was the Albatross, which is a Public Image Limited song.
Mm-hmm.
But then I could sing them and wait. But I never really come to that, because I would have to make much more lyrics as well for the other pieces. So I decided to leave it instrumental. But I kept like the bass line, which is not exactly like an albatross, but it's kind of reminiscent of that. Maybe one day I will do a 12-inch that will have a vocal version of that. And hope that Johnny Rotten will sue me or something.
Hey. Well, I should probably let you go. Thank you so much for doing this. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for calling me.
That was an interview with musician Ivan Pavlov, who records as Son. And that interview first aired on Rare Frequency on WZBC in Newton, Massachusetts in March of 2006. To learn more about Son, or to leave a comment about this or any other podcast, go to rarefrequency.com. I'm going to leave you now with a track from Son's latest release. The latest release is titled Patterns. It's an EP on Raster Noton. This is Path Number 3, which is subtitled Dynamo Baby Bore Me Numb.